Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumour Charity, a cause that means a great deal to me personally. And thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear my story as well as the Williams Formula One team's planning director Richard Jones now, with more to come. Also, if you feel like getting involved further, the Brain Tumour Charity is running the Conquer the Challenge through till May, a virtual fundraiser for those fitness inclined, and there's a leaderboard, so if you're competitive, this is for you. All the details are at braintumourcharity.org. Together, we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. Now, as you know, without you and our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to carry on doing what we do, which is bringing you the biggest names in motorsport and delving into their lives and opinions. This season, we couldn't be happier to be teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. With F1 Experiences official ticket packages coming direct from Formula One, you can get unique access that simply isn't available anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. Good things come to those who listen to the Motormouth podcast. Don't say we don't treat you well. So what are you waiting for? The 2021 F1 season is set to be one of the closest in years, so get booking your F1 experience today with F1experiences.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name's Tim Sylvie. Now this week we're joined by a trailblazer from Saudi Arabia. But before we introduce her, did you know, Harry Benjamin, that Saudi Arabia is the 13th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Arab world? 95% of the country is considered a desert or a semi-desert, and there's not one single river in the entire place. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I mean, I'd love to go to that part of the world. I've never been before, so it's definitely on the bucket list. But and I knew it was, you know, there's a lot of desert out there, but it's always great to hear the facts and figures, Tim.
You're welcome. I've been there a few times, actually. I've been to Jeddah twice. No, Riyadh twice and Jeddah once or twice.
Racing is, that's happening more and more out there as the months and years go by.
So it is.
The Formula E there, F1's going there this year.
Yeah, big you appetite. Know,
it's madness.
It is indeed. Well, shall I bring in today's guest?
Oh, I think so.
So today's guest is Rima Jafali, a Saudi Arabian racing driver who only picked up the sport in 2018 when she raced in the TRD 86 Cup in the UAE, becoming the first Saudi female to race competitively. She's gone on to race in British F4 and even the Jaguar I-Pace trophy in her home country. She's featured in Forbes Middle East 30 Under 30, and in 2021 is with Douglas Motorsport for the British Formula 3 Championship. Rima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you guys.
It's such a pleasure to have you, Rima. Where are you joining us from at the moment?
I'm in Cambridge, actually, at the moment, in between my tests. Yeah.
there's a few more rivers there than in Saudi, I think.
Definitely. I mean, we don't need rivers in Saudi. We have the Red Sea, so I'm okay with that.
Good point. Well,
yeah, you're fine with that.
Yeah. Hey, just around the corner. I was expecting to say you're in, you know, a lovely villa in Jeddah or something, and you're literally down the road from me up the... what is it, the A40, M40 or one of those. Now, listen, you've come into motorsport pretty late. Take us back to your childhood first. Where was home? Where did you grow up? What was life like for you? And when did motorsport come onto your radar?
Okay, there's a lot in there. I'll try and cover as much as I can. But I grew up in Saudi, in Jeddah. Studied there. Graduated high school from there. So, basically Saudi through and through. And I knew that I was going to go abroad for university after, after high school. So that was an exciting time for me. But to go back to growing up in Saudi, I think for me, it was a really great place to kind of explore. I had a really big community of friends, family, and I was very much like an active child who was always, wanted to race someone else. I mean, just running, not in a car, not at the time. And I was very competitive and really liked to kind of explore and new areas, get up to no good sometimes, find my ways around things. I was definitely not too easy to handle when I was a kid, but... In the end of the day, I kind of stayed out of trouble. I think my parents would attest to that. I just barely was on the limit. So that was good. I think what was cool about it was I was very much into sports from a very young age. I was into what you would say, was at the time for me was unconventional things like, football. What they would say is maybe more... things that males would like, not necessarily a female. So a lot of the times I found that, I had to find people to join me whether it was, soccer or football or playing sports and find any outlet I can to just let that out and explore that, because at the time there wasn't much of it. And I found too, I managed, with friends, with family, whether it was a yard or school sports, I was a part of it all, and sport was very much a part of me from a very young age. And how did racing come into play? It was pretty much my passion for cars, and I didn't mention this, but within all of the sports and playing football, and I'm a Manchester United fan, so that's another thing that
let's end it there.
that's another thing that is very big in Saudi. Football is a very big thing, so we all like supported our either Premier League teams and stuff. So I played as well a lot of football when I was there, and just basically being around sports and racing for me was just not something I was exposed to at all, actually. I watched a lot of other sports, but not racing. And cars was very much like an interest of mine, but very much just like production cars. I know the odd Mercedes, Ferrari, and kind of, I would say now Saudi is in terms of, there's a very big population of motorheads, but in the let's say production cars, not as a sport. And it wasn't until I went to university and started, having access just on TV, really, it's quite basic, that I started watching all of these different sports, from tennis to Le Mans to Formula One. And that's when, the link of cars and sports kind of collided. And that's when I found racing, if you like.
And university was in Boston, right? So you've flitted across to the States. What was that move like? Was that your first major move abroad? And did you go on your own? Did you go with any family? How did you adapt to the culture?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think like most people, I was very excited to leave home. I wanted to explore. I was kind of ready to go out and you know, find my independence, if you like. But I did have quite a few friends who were going there, friends who already studied there. So there was a community there for me. Family, not really. There wasn't at the time. But it was quite a busy city, Boston, for students. So you always knew people around, which was definitely helpful.
So while you're at uni and you get sort of exposed to sports and motor racing, can you remember that very first moment where you were watching, maybe it was a race or was it Le Mans, and you thought, was there a particular moment where you thought, oh, okay, perhaps I could do this. I could be the one driving.
Yeah, it was, I definitely remember. It might have been 2011, 2012, I was watching Le Mans and I was going through the driver list of drivers and I was looking at their pictures. I was like, oh, wow, you know, these guys are older. You know, they're not, you know, I just assumed that everyone had to be young as an athlete, that, you know, there was a prime to it. But it was just so refreshing to see that there was, you know, people who were older than me and competing at a high level. And that's kind of when I thought, okay, there's still room for me to give this a go. You know, I didn't think that, anything about like taking it at a professional level. It was more of, oh, I can, you know, go into racing and find a competition that I could join and still do it on the weekend. You know, that was the way I looked at it and the approach. But watching Le Mans, knowing that there were drivers who were competitive, who weren't at that age that I thought, you know, like, let's say your 20s, it was an eye-opening thing. And that's kind of, you know, maybe let's say when the seed was planted.
That is really encouraging, because you look at the motorsport landscape today and, you know, they seem to be getting younger and younger by the bloody day. It's madness.
Yeah.
But when did that moment where you thought, okay, I want to take it to the next level come and that professional mindset come in?
I think how I have to, you know, preface this by saying that I, you know, started racing with, you know, the idea that I wanted to figure this out and understand this on a more personal level and, you know, maybe take it up on the weekends. It wasn't something that I thought I could make something of. You know, I didn't know what to expect going into it. So I almost didn't set my bar too high going in. It was just like learn, understand, figure it out. And it was probably after my first race weekend that I realized, I'm like, oh my God, you know, like this feeling coming out of the car, the adrenaline, the rush, I'm in over my head. Oh my God. You know, like there's just so many thoughts running through my head and almost like pure happiness as well that I had never felt before. I was like, I have to do this again and I have to do this better. And that's almost how it came about. And then going into the you know, a few months later, joining the British F4 and, you know, being it, you know, I would say like the home of motorsport, first race at Brands Hatch, you know, historic, you know, I couldn't ask for anything more like, you know, attractive, if you like, or, you know, bright lights kind of thing. And I just found myself laughing before the first race because it started raining. And I'm just like, this is what I need. I need some rain, you know, like on my debut. And that's
to,
when
to really
that's
cap
when,
off the full experience.
Exactly. You know, the UK doesn't disappoint in that end. But yeah, that's when I, you know, being in the British F4 and seeing the competition and the level of, you know, how much it takes, you know, to be a professional racing driver, to get every ounce of your, you know, ability out. That's when I realized, you know, this is it. This is definitely where I need to be and where I need to take it to the next level.
And there's obviously a growing number of females in motorsport now with the likes of the W Series, you know, increasing female participation. And it seems like a sport that's on the up. And you met Susie Wolfe in 2017. What was that meeting like? Was that an inspiring moment for you? Did that really help drive you on?
Definitely. I think so. At the time, I had been thinking about, you know, racing and it was in the back of my mind. I was probably at the time deciding what career path I wanted to take, and I'd move back to Saudi, and it was almost like I had all of these options ahead of me, and I had to make some decisions. And just at the time, having met her or being put in touch with her, was very much a sign for me. I took as, okay, this is, you've been saying racing and you've been thinking racing. This is the time, you know, this can't be, this can't just be a coincidence. And that's meeting her and spoke to her, and she almost, you know, acted as that, you know, that first step for me. And she is a mentor today for me. And I think thanks to her, and I think the chance meeting for me was what, you know, gave me the confidence to take that step.
Yeah, it feels like Susie is changed a lot of lives in that way, you know, a bit of a pioneer, much like yourself, who's touching people who are coming into the sport and making a direct impact. Now, the racing scene in Saudi, let's talk a little bit about that. Since you started picking up the sport and you've made your way outside of the country, but made a name for yourself back home as well, are you starting to see more girls pick up the sport in Saudi? And do you feel like you have a responsibility there now to help try and bring that talent through?
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of Saudi and motorsport, it's definitely a very new and exciting time. I mean, rallying has been, you know, in Saudi for a very long time, but, you know, what I do, let's say circuit racing, or is definitely a new thing, and it's exciting. And sport in general, I would say, what's going on, it's really exciting, and the opportunities available for everyone. People are starting to think about, you know, different career paths, and girls especially have these opportunities, which is great. It wasn't something that I, like I said, could think of when I was growing up back then. And I do definitely get quite a few requests from girls, you know, how can we go about doing this? You know, what advice do you have for us? And I think at this point in time, you know, the infrastructure needs to come, you know, we need racetracks, we need kart tracks, we need these things first. And I definitely feel like I do have a role to play, and I would love to be, you know, there on the ground, doing what I can. Giving back and encouraging young girls to find their passions, whether it be motorsport or anything else.
So is there a general encouragement for racing and, of course, for women in racing in Saudi? Because obviously we've seen over here in Europe and across in the Americas as well, there is a continuing growing movement that we need more females in motorsport. And that has to start from, you know, a grassroots level as well. And that's going to take time to build and build and build. But obviously, do you feel like there's a bit more pressure on you? Have you faced any backlash because you're not only a woman in motorsport and trying and racing successfully, but you're coming from a part of the world where, you know, women couldn't drive until 2018. So has there been any backlash with you going on to pursue what your dreams, I suppose, or has there been a general change and an encouragement towards this kind of thing?
I mean, I think that the short answer is there's definitely a change and an excitement that is on the ground that everyone can feel. And I think you all can feel as well. You know, it's just that the demand is there, and people just want to, you know, take everything on and experience everything. I think the one thing that my age plays, you know, a good part in this is that I've come into this, you know, kind of eyes open, you know, with some experience of, I don't know if I want to call it life experience, but, you know, just I understand a few things. So I can come in with my eyes open, and it didn't feel, you know, that the pressure that I could have felt, let's say, if I did it when I was a much younger age at a more vulnerable time in my life. So I think that in that way, age definitely played a good part in keeping me grounded, and keeping my eyes up. But encouragement wise, I was surprised by all of the support and encouragement and messages that I received from everyone, and not just from Saudi. It was, you know, anyone who felt the same way or felt like, you know, things were impossible to them. And I have to be honest and say that, yes, there was some sort of, oh my God, this is bigger than me. You know, like I went in just purely out of love and passion. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to see where this is going to go. And I found that there's so much more out there that I can do and I want to do. And with that, I wouldn't say it was pressure. It's more of a responsibility that I now need to think about and I now need to incorporate. And I want to share as well so that I can, you know, speak and connect with people, because it wasn't something that I initially thought would come with starting, you know, a career in motor racing. but it has, and I'm very grateful for that.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including driver appearances, private pit lane walks, behind-the-scenes tours of the illustrious F1 paddock, team garages, the famous podium, and loads more. It's the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when booking online at f1experiences.com.
I think it's fascinating, you know, this whole subject, and you know, there's bound to be people who perhaps make the mistake of listening to the UK media, for example, when they hear your story, and they're like, well, how did you do that? How did you get out of Saudi? You know, and this really grinds my gears, because, you know, what you have now is a platform to be able to educate people, not only about females in motorsport, but females in motorsport from Saudi Arabia. And what really gets me, having spent time in Jeddah and Riyadh and several weeks and over probably 4 or 5 years, is the change that I've seen in that short time in Saudi. And having spent time in Riyadh, which is perceived as, you know, the conservative capital, which it is, of Saudi Arabia. But even there, it's so chilled. It's a young population full of amazing people who are, I've never had hospitality like I've had in Saudi Arabia. And the people welcomed us there with open arms, all these different events that we were doing, from boxing and WWE and whatever. And they've got such an appetite for sport over there, and are desperate for more and more content. And they're all on Snapchat, you know, taking our numbers, getting photos with us and welcoming us. And they sounded so frustrated about the external perception of Saudi Arabia. And the people of Saudi are not the government of Saudi. And there is a difference there. And do you feel that when you talk to people in the UK or across Europe, do you sense that? And do you feel like, outside of your racing obligation, you have a sense of being an ambassador for your country?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I do want to say that I have that same feeling, you know, going, I mean, I've been away from Saudi now for 3 years or so with my racing. I'm in and out of Saudi and not there all the time. And every time I go back, I'm like, wow, okay, this is another new thing. Oh, we can do this. Oh, this is available. You know, like with cinemas, with things that people here, you know, not necessarily appreciate, but you don't think that, oh, you know, how would life be without a cinema? But
you take it for granted.
Yeah, exactly. And for us, you know, having that outlet and having cinema was like, you know, it is exciting. And I think it's just, there's so much more to come for Saudi, and that's a very exciting part. And I'm excited to see, you know, what the future holds there. I forgot the question. I got excited.
That's all right. No, I'm just curious about, you know, how you position yourself. Now you have this platform, you know, you have a growing platform and an opportunity, you know, much like, you know, Lewis Hamilton does with Black Lives Matters. He's like, I've got this platform. I'm going to shout about a cause I believe in. And I feel quite passionately about this, having spent so much time in Saudi, that the country gets such a bad rap. And mm-hmm. it must be, you know, it feels important for people like you who have this growing platform to be able to shout about your country in a positive way, not for all the Western nonsense that comes out of this country so often.
Yeah, definitely. And that's quite an important point. And I think, you know, having been to the UK from quite a young age, I've, let's say, battled with this, with, you know, the fact that coming from Saudi, being from Saudi, doesn't necessarily come with the best reputation at the time when I was growing up. So it was almost like I was, you know, I really had to, whenever I did meet someone, I really wanted to make sure that I was setting a good example and I was making a good impression. And I do get, I remember, like, when I was probably 18 or younger, you know, that thing like, oh, we've never met a Saudi that speaks, you know, good English like you. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm glad to be that person. So it was always there in the back of my mind. I think that I did want to do that. And I do want to do that now. And I think, you know, the more people are exposed to Saudis and Arabs, you know, doing different things, and also for Arabs to see other Arabs, you know, making a name for themselves abroad, doing, having, being an example as well, you know, having people that they can relate to, that's all very important.
Yeah. And you are a trailblazer. You're changing the perception of it. So it must have been a bit nerve-wracking when you jumped across to the UK for the first time, and you've been here for a few years now, when you took part in Formula 4. That must have been quite a big, scary jump. You know, did you move here, or were you back and forth at the time? And, you know, did you have any family support? Because we've talked to a lot of racing drivers, you know, who move huge distances to come to race to Europe, and they leave their entire family behind. And it's a sacrifice, but you've got to be committed, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a sacrifice, you know, deciding to take on such a, you know, foreign thing for many people around me, you know nothing about motorsport or, you know, even an athlete's life. So it was great to have their support. I have to say, you know, that my family and my friends played a very big part and continue to play a big part. But yeah, I think leaving home and coming here, initially I was actually, you know, coming in and out a lot in my first year, and then decided that actually it was better that once the season started that I do base myself from here, just in terms of, you know, focus and priorities, and it just made things easier rather than, you know, kind of jumping around too much, which ends up happening anyway. But I planned for it not to happen.
So you're living in? Are you living in Cambridge now? Is that your home?
Oh no! I'm basically in between tests now. So I'm just like I was just at Snetterton, and now I'm going to another track. So I just happen to be in Cambridge, but I'm living in London. Yeah, I'm doing the back and forth thing. That I'm on the road. But I'm living in London at the moment.
Ah, nice.
What were those first sort of learnings from your experience over here in racing in Formula 4? Was it, you know, were you completely blindsided? Did you feel prepared? Did you take a lot from it to move on to the next chapter?
Without it sounding so cliche, but it definitely changed my life and just my outlook on everything because of, I mean, starting something like this that at a high level, without much experience, you know, coming in with like three months of experience, and most of the guys that I was racing against, like, you know, you would imagine have, you know, 10 years or more experience, but they're only like 16 or 17 and, you know, hot-blooded, and they want to get ahead of you. So I definitely had a really good team going in because they gave me the right things to think about and to focus on. So on my first race, they said, you know, the most important thing is to get to the finish. You know, don't make mistakes. Don't spin. Don't, you know, whatever is, just get to the finish. And that was my goal. My goal was to get to the finish. And I ended up like surpassing my goal and, you know, being in the top 10 on my first weekend, which was
brilliant,
which is very exciting. And it was just at the time, thanks to many, many younger guys making mistakes and getting too excited. And I just kind of kept my head and drove past their mistakes. So things like that. And a lot of things that I've picked up with racing, I could translate now into like my daily life, whether it's, you know, when you're racing, you kind of, when you do get, let's say, riled up or you're angry and you get in a car and you're trying to kind of perform at that level, you can't because there's just too much, let's say, stress or lack of attention because you're caught up on something that upsets you or someone who maybe pushed you off. And it had happened on one of the races, I recall, that I thought that I was, you know, wronged and one of the drivers kind of like pushed me out of track. I lost the position, but I was still there. And I was definitely quicker than him. And I just kept trying to, you know, catch him up, but I couldn't because I was driving so aggressively in my head. And then I realized, like, there's no room for that. You know, anytime that happens, it's a reset, focus. And if anything, I need to collect myself and be calm. And that's something that now, you know, I catch myself doing that whenever I'm in a position of, you know, something frustrating me or upsetting me that it's almost like I have to slow down a little bit. It's very odd that, you know, you're in a race car, you want to go fast, but you have to.
It's that Jedi moment. It's like, right, I'm going to just pause, breathe, bring out the Jedi. It's funny, actually. Yeah. I think it could even be an advantage that females have in motorsport, right? Because now hear me out on this one. And Harry, you remember when we interviewed Charlie Martin?
I already know where you're going.
So yeah. So Charlie Martin, for those that don't know, is also a pioneer in a different way. She is a transgender racing driver who's now racing with at Praga, in a Praga car. Really, really cool. She's doing fantastically. Got two podiums in her first two races, I think. But she said when she went through the transition, she had all her testosterone effectively taken out of her, i.e. all her hot-headedness and aggression. And it said it's made her a better driver being female because she's calmer, she has peace of mind, she can take those moments just to relax and hold back and make an educated and informed decision rather than charging in and, you know, taking someone out. So it's an interesting thing around the male-female psyche, particularly with 16-year-old guys, like you say, who are full of new testosterone and just flinging themselves around a track. So it's an interesting thing to think about. Now, let's bring it up to speed. So 2021, you have moved up from Formula 4 into British Formula 3, which is notoriously challenging and competitive. How are you feeling going into it? What are your expectations? This is going to be a great year for you, isn't it?
You're piling on the pressure there, Tim.
Yeah. I had to turn the screw a little bit.
I'm really excited, to be honest. Like, I'm really enjoying the car. It does feel like a race car. The downforce is something I'm having to get used to and trust, but yeah. It's just, I mean, I think being in the right car with the right team really gives me the confidence to kind of take the right steps and have that in mind for the whole season. And yeah, it's just really exciting to have that change after being in F4 for 2 years. Yes, I'm familiar with the British tracks, but to have that kind of refreshing, refreshing car, refreshing team. It's exciting. I'm very excited.
Have you set yourself any expectations, or are you just going to see how the first race goes?
Definitely, there's some expectations. Like, you know, I'd like to be, you know, competitive and in the top 10. And I would love. I mean, the podium is always in sight, and it's always a goal that I'd love to have, or I'd love to be on. But yeah, top 10, I think. Consistently, and you know, just as long as I'm improving, that's how I look at it. I'm taking steps and making some improvements, mm-hmm. and maybe you know, making sure to have some cars behind me. That's a win for me.
In a dream scenario, what is the ultimate goal? How far do you want to take this? Where do you want to go with it?
To be honest, like ever since I watched F1 and Le Mans, for me, what spoke to me was, you know, Le Mans and in the endurance racing aspect of it. You know, for Formula One is a far-reaching goal. And, you know, maybe if I started a lot earlier in my younger, that could have been a realistic goal. But Le Mans and winning the Le Mans would be amazing. Definitely a goal of mine.
Fantastic. And do you have any racing idols? Is there anyone that you've looked up to over the years that really inspires you?
When I started like following racing, I think at the time, you know, Vettel was like making a name for himself. Lewis has to be mentioned without a doubt. He's definitely up there. And I've actually like enjoyed watching quite a few historic races of like Ayrton Senna, Mansell. I found all of these archives that I've been really like enjoying and yeah, I think there's a lot there that we have to look up to today because it was just a whole other sport back then. Mm. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of idols, but those are just a few.
And what you've done up till now is pretty remarkable. You know, breaking down barriers quite literally. What advice would you give to any young girls who want to follow in your footsteps and perhaps are at that age now where Formula One could be a realistic opportunity?
The best advice I'd say is, you know, you need to try things, put yourself in these situations, meet, like if it's to go to wherever, I mean, whether you're in Europe or in the Middle East, like go to your local track, you know, join a karting race. I think exposure is very important, and as well, like forming your connection and your network And just having a better understanding gives you the confidence to make those steps. You know, if it's a dream and you just continues to be a dream, it's not achievable because it still feels far away. But even small steps will get you closer to the dream. So I think taking those steps and trying different things is my advice.
That's great advice. Good, yeah. Inspiring stuff. And there's our snippet for the podcast sorted. let's talk talents. You're a good racing driver. We know that. You're quick. What else are you good at? Have you got any hidden talents? You know, coming from Saudi, I don't imagine skiing is top of your list, like my illustrious friend Harry here. But what else are you good at?
What else am I good at? I'm a very organized person. I don't know if that's a talent, but
how organized are we talking? Is it sort of you turn up on time, or is it OCD levels?
Yeah, like I had to get myself out of OCD. So it was when I was in college and living in my own flat, and it was too organized that it was uncomfortable. So I had to like make it a bit like had to leave things around the flat to just get used to it being a little bit, you know, more homey.
You're sort of walking around just dropping stuff going, I can do this. That washing is staying on the floor.
Exactly. No, now I'm okay. I can tell you I have a few things around me. It's not an OCD thing. I've grown out of it, but I think, I don't know if that's a hidden talent, but I've been told that I make very good cookies. So I take that as a hidden talent and one that I very much appreciate because I also enjoy cookies myself.
We welcome gifts. So, you know, if you want to stick something in the post, absolutely fine. We'll send you a cap in return. One of our lovely friends about
that. Maybe I'll do that.
That's a win-win situation. Go on, let's flip that on its head then, though. What are you awful at? Just terrible.
Ooh, what am I awful at? I'd probably say like art-related things. You know, I may be good at tracing, but I don't think I'm very... I don't think I'm very creative in that.
You can't
level.
Say you're good at tracing. Surely everyone's good at tracing. Like
my OCD helps, you know, with the tracing. But no.
I think that's a common trait actually among racing drivers. The artistic side isn't always at the forefront of their skill set. But Rima, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. We have three final questions that we ask to all of our guests. They're all the same every single time, unless Tim wants to go off track and adds in an occasional spanner in the works. But let's kick off with the first one. What's got you excited at this very moment?
Probably my racing season, as it's coming up. It's now, you know, within a month, so I'm pretty excited about that. But as of right this second, it was probably that it was sunny outside.
For a fleeting moment. Question number two, if not doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
I mean, where I was before racing, I was kind of, you know, in the world of finance, you know, in that development world, I think probably would have kind of continued in that journey and mm-hmm. Probably worked in the Middle East for a while.
Final question for you. What are you scared of?
Oh, okay. This is actually quite interesting because I didn't think I was scared of anything or much, to be precise. But recently I was thinking, so whenever I get injured now where I have, you know, whatever happens to me outside of the car or maybe even inside of the car, my first thought is, oh my God, like, am I going to be okay to race? Or am I going to be okay to get in the car? So probably probably that's going to be something I'm scared of. I'm scared of getting injured, not to be able to keep going or just, you know, keep doing what I enjoy doing.
Not spiders or something like that. You must get some weird, creepy, like massive desert spiders or something in Saudi, don't you? There's got to be something horrible in the desert. Look,
there is, but I'm actually quite okay with insects and all of that, snakes, and they don't scare me too much.
I saw a mini spider this morning right above my bed, and I had a mini heart attack. It was literally about the size of a fingernail, but I still had a mini heart attack. I can't do. I just can't. Anything that moves quickly is a danger, as far as I'm concerned, and can disappear like that, not having it.
You're weird.
Fair enough.
Rima, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I have to say, these are one of my favourite types of shows because you, like I said earlier, you've built yourself a platform. You've got an amazing opportunity now to make your mark in racing, and who knows how far you'll go, but also have a voice and be an ambassador for Saudi Arabia and the Middle East and a part of the world that I'm hugely fond of. So I wish you all the best for your British F3 season this year. We'll be keeping a close eye on your progress. Continue the great work, continue pushing the positive messages and the inspiring messages. It's really, really good to have you on. I'm sure people are going to love listening. So Rima Jafari, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much, Tim. Harry, it was a pleasure.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package today, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.